Welcome, everybody. This is Winfrey, and this is our Monday night conference call that we do live on VBS. And once a month, usually, we have a call with my dear friend Carla Rucker. And she's here. You want to say hello to people, Carla?
Hello there, everybody. It's so good to be here. Thanks for asking me, Win. Hey, Terry.
And
Hi, Terry. Hello, everybody. This is Terry. I'm also on the line.
And we heard somebody just check in.
Hi, this is Jean from South Dakota.
Hi, Jean.
Hi.
We're on live. Don't curse.
Hi, everybody.
All right. So, why are we here? Here we are. We could say that every moment of the day, every day of the week. What are we doing? Why are we here? Here we know we're here. We wake up every day. And, of course, here today is in a rather strange world by standards, say, 20 or 30 years ago. Hang on a second.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
And I think people's answer to the question, why are they here, would be different today than it was 20 years ago. Like somebody, Carla, somebody asked you, maybe we have to go 30 years ago with you. If somebody asked you, why are you here 30 years ago, what would you have said?
Well, it's a little different for me than for most people because I knew Jesus personally in an odd way so early in life, and I was so devoted to Jesus as a little toddler that I have always pretty much been here to serve my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And to translate that into more general terms, I'm here to serve the light and the love of the one infinite creator. That's just never changed for me, and I know that makes me way different from most people. Most people really have to wake up and then go, oh, wow, I'm outside the box, and everything looks really different now. You know, I'm looking at eternity. I'm not looking at this little life. But for me, it's been a very steady state incarnation so far where I woke up every morning.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
So you give the same answer today.
And just said, Lord, this is your day. What would you like me to do? I'm sorry,
that
doesn't make for big coffee, does it? Oh, well.
It's a little sappy, but you know what? It's true, so what the heck?
What can I say? But, you know, it's a challenge sometimes. You wake up and things aren't going your way, and you think, how in the world can I serve?
Uh-huh.
It's always a way, because serving isn't doing, it's really being.
Right.
So I can always be in tune with love, hopefully. But I agree with you. I think most people, you know, they went through the cultural conditioning of school and peers and the society and the buzz. And then one day, I'm sure all of those listening in today had something, some critical moment of choice that happened. And however it happened, it put them outside the cultural, you know, the condition. And then everything changed. When did that happen for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Now you have to ask me, if somebody asked me, why are you here 30 years ago, I should tell you that first, right?
You would have said, see the sun come up on Santa Monica Boulevard, is what you would have said.
I would have said, here I am with my guitar, trudging around to some new city, and I wonder what woman is going to take me home. My life was unusual then, but I was reliving my troubadour life, and I was having all these synchronicities. all these, how could I say it? All these cognitions about how amazing life was.
Well,
and I was very outside of the box. Very outside of the box. And
what's funny
I said,
about
I'm supposed to play music. Who am I going to play music to? And where am I going to go? And I would, you know, I would be sleeping in people's living rooms from couch surfing from one city to the next. And if you ask me why am I here today, I would say that I am here to manifest all my talents to be of service in this time of shift, knowing that I have many different talents that can reach people that no one else might be able to reach. And knowing that and seeing that happen, I'm just saying, how do I do more? What do I do next? And looking at what's in front of me. And that's why I'm here. Terry.
Couple things. Lynn?
Yeah.
Couple things. First of all, are you hearing any squealing on the line?
That was somebody. I'm in the hall, and somebody just came in the door, and the door squeaked.
Okay. The other thing was, since your original question was, what changed, you know, like basically what changed between when you were a kid and now, I was interested to find out what sprung you out of the box and onto the road. What point was it where, you know, what happened in your youth at some point that made you feel, oh, wait a minute, this isn't where I want to be. I want to be outside of this box.
Well, you know what? It was a lot of serendipity. When I was in high school, I was a ham radio operator, and I was a commercial licensed radio operator, and I was really smart on radios, and I would come home from school, and we lived in a little row house in Philadelphia, and I had this huge antenna on the roof, and I would go up to my little bedroom, turn my transmitter on, and I would be that I built myself from scratch, probably when I was 14 years old, and I would talk to people all over the world. And I was having a gas.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, I had a boyfriend once with Sam, and it was more fun than anything. He had,
yeah.
Did you collect postcards from all over? All the people that...
did I? I may have, yeah.
Yeah.
You talk to would
how about you,
Terry?
The box.
Wait a second.
Well,
I didn't finish the answer, Carla. What happened?
Again?
Do you mind, Terry? Let me just finish the answer. So I thought
okay.
I had this aptitude as an engineer, and I went to school at Berkeley, University of California, as a physics major, and I used to sleep through all my classes and then cram about 2 days before the finals, and it was just totally boring. And I kept meeting this woman on the campus. Her name was Jillian, and it was those synchronistic meetings. And she was a bohemian. She was an artist. She was an astrologer. She was into metaphysical stuff. And I was a scientist. But I had started to write lyrics to other people's songs just as a game. I never thought of doing it seriously. And one time, Jillian took me home, invited me to her house, and I ended up showing her some of my lyrics, and she fell for me. And we started living together, and we started a rock and roll band. We traveled around the country in a Volkswagen bus, and this is at the time when we were hippie emissaries. We were greeted everywhere, and And I just left engineering behind in a flash. And eventually I got to the place where I said, there's something I need to learn about life. And I remember I was in Berkeley, and I had a backpack, and I put some astrology books in a sack, and I had my guitar. And I went out to University Avenue, and I said, okay, if there's a God, I want to find him. And I started hitchhiking, and I said, I'm going to go wherever I go. And that started me as my itinerant singer career, where I would write songs about my experiences. And I did it for about 4 years, and had loads and loads of synchronicities. And that's how I got out of the box. And in fact, you know, I had a very hard time integrating what I had learned or what I had experienced when I stopped traveling. I could only have that happen when I was traveling. And I started to realize, well, and I look back on it, it has to do with one's matrix, that everyone has a matrix that they've come in on, or a hologram, or size of their hologram. And I'm sure I came in with a big hologram that was very, very compressed in my childhood. And the only way I experienced my hologram expanding was through traveling, because I didn't get caught up in other people's reality systems. I only was at a place long enough to, you know, touch down and say, hi, here's a few songs, and here's an astrology chart, and I would move on. And so I was surfing. It felt like I was surfing in another dimension, actually in the physical realm, because of all the synchronicities that occurred. I mean, it was amazing. And it made an impression on my life that I said, I have to go back to that place. I don't understand that. I don't want to have to hitchhike the rest of my life. But I did come to understand it. What I realized was, if I was going to stay in one place, I had to do something where my hologram was as big as it was when I was hitchhiking. And that would allow me to ground. Otherwise, I didn't know how to ground. So that's how I got to here.
That's a great story.
Terry?
Yes.
Who were you 30 years ago?
Well, if I could start, like, you mentioned a couple of ham experiences, each of you. And when I was a kid, I was a ham. And my father and I used to have philosophical conversations and talk about Edgar Cayce. And then I decided I wanted to know how things worked, so I got a degree in physics from college. However, it mainly just described sort of formulas for the workings of it, but it didn't get down to the philosophical basis of why everything was. And so then I started to work for an electronics company and got a master's degree in library science, and I became a technical librarian. But I was just searching philosophically for how things worked and what was going on. And so that kind of led me into the things where I am now. I did teach Sunday school from the age of 14 to the age of 18. And so I had a big religious basis. Used to pray and read the Bible. And so that's kind of like where I was at. And this stuff that we're working with now is leading me somewhere. I'm just amazed at some stuff that comes through, and I'm just delighted. It's like an expansion into other realms where I've wanted to go.
Now, I know there's people, somebody out there listening that just happened to tune in and say, who are these people? We're talking about all this stuff. So let me just clue you in. Carla and Terry are both people that are able to have voices come through them that describe, the voices describe themselves to be from other dimensions. And they seem to be positive. And I happen to be a guy that found myself in the middle of having my close personal associates having these voices chasing me around, wanting to talk to me. And Terry was one of them, and saying, we want to talk to him. We have something to say. Don't you have questions for us? And I spent the last 8 years questioning this isn't all I do, but I've spent 8 years, it's been going on for 8 years, where I've had the opportunity to ask hundreds and hundreds of questions to this voice that said they were the Council of Elohim, and they said they created this realm. And so, having a physics major background, I'm saying, well, how did you create this realm? How does that work? And they just chat with me. They don't, you know, historically, Elohim was one of the names in the Bible for God. And we just chat about this. They're not God in the way that religion would make God out to be. But as far as I can tell from the answers to their questions, and it all is very coherent, they are the creators of this realm. They were the first energy beings before there was a physical universe. And the creation of this realm was more, this is how they describe it, was more like fun and games. Let's just play. They're energy beings, and they found that they could concentrate energies in a certain way, and those energies that got concentrated would persevere, whereas otherwise energies didn't persevere. They would just be slipping and sliding, just like your thoughts. They don't persevere. But this realm was the result of their efforts in making energy persevere, and it was kind of like an art piece or later on a fish tank. And as physical beings got here, their prime directive was free will. So we are the culmination of the result of free will in the Elohim's art piece. I hope I'm not offending anybody. Yeah.
I'd like to add to that, if that's all right.
Please.
What the Confederation entities would say is that the Creator wanted to know more about itself, and so it decided of its own free will to create a creation and spin out parts of itself, so that all these parts of the Godhead principle, which are us, would
mm-hmm.
experience things and witness things and do everything that they desired. And then at the end of a fruitful life, they would give that fruit of experience to the Creator, who would then know more about itself than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's an art. In another way, it's a way for the Creator to know more about itself. And we're just
well, you know what? You know, it's like the thing about it. Let me now just hear me out here. Let me just see if I'm getting this straight. Because if I was going to say it in my way, I would say not so much that the Creator was wanting to know about itself, but because what we're doing down here is a self that's unfolding that has no real direction. In the physical, we are the co-creators of the direction. So this is the self that didn't exist when the decision was made to create a physical realm?
Well, now that's
Does that make sense? Pardon me?
Well, I'd say it's a debatable point.
It's
but
debatable
when you're
point.
Talking
okay.
about what came first, the chicken or the egg, you're talking about, well, what time are we talking about? Are we talking about time that flows from the past to the present to the future? Or are we talking about God's time or the Creator's time, in which all times are simultaneous, and we were before the world was, along with all aspects of the Creator?
I agree.
That manifest yet.
Right.
So it would be a debatable. You could never solve this. You know,
it just
has to be a paradox. I think when you hit paradox, you know you're on the right track. You're on the
right. It's a paradox. You know, when you start to contemplate the idea that there's no time, or that all times are simultaneous, that right now is all time. Now I've thought about this. I'm not going to try to put it into words because I take too long. Terry, anything you want to add?
Yes. No. So I'm just really interested in listening here.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure. Sometimes you say really great things and you need to be... the water, otherwise... You know, the first time Terry channeled publicly, we were in Santa Barbara, and I did a workshop, and she was in the audience, and I looked at her, and I said, do they want to say anything? And so she came up and looked at terror, with terror at the ground, and then it became very beautiful. So, in any case, I made an announcement.
Beautiful friendship was born there. A beautiful friendship was born. I said a beautiful friendship was born there.
Yes. Well, obviously, all time exists simultaneously, but us humans are in this time right now, which is the end of a 75,000-year cycle, and we're seeing many of the things happen that have been predicted for a long time, predicted by Edgar Cayce, predicted by Jesus, predicted in your raw material, I believe, for sure.
Right. Predicted in the Mayan calendar, predicted by
the Hope
Theory.
And
by astrology.
And we're seeing things happen on the planet, like tsunamis, like oil spills, like increased earthquakes. And, I mean, people wonder, is this the end of the world? What are they saying? What's happening? And, of course, we're all talking to these beings outside of time that have ability to view certain things from their level. But as I've come to learn in my conversations, and I think this is the most important thing I have learned with all my channeling experiences and all my discussions with other realms, and that is that we are creating what happens. We, as humans, to a certain extent, each of us, depending on our ability to expand our hologram into higher realms, becomes part of a co-creator in this realm or not. And if we are not participating in the creation of things that are positive, there are other beings who are actively co-creating things that are negative. So unless there's enough of us down here co-creating intentions, high intentions, then the scenarios, the potential of the scenarios change. And that's my experience. And I mean, when we have conversations with the Elohim, and when I say the Elohim, when I say they created this realm, anyone who's listening for the first time, don't believe me, because you don't know that that's who I'm talking to unless you study my work, and you still may not know. But, you know, if I say I'm talking to the creator of this realm, that's a huge thing to say, and it should not be believed without kicking a lot of tires. But nonetheless, over the past years that it's happened, I've come to believe it. I believe it because I've watched the consistency of the communications. I've watched them do certain miracles, which from their end is not a miracle, because you see here everything is fixed and slow. But from their side, it's all like, oh, if we think it, it happens. And so the key is how to get that quality of them into this realm, which is possible, which is partially prayer is a human intention that, if it's powerful, it penetrates dimensions and causes rearrangement of things in the physical that couldn't have happened just by a physical idea. But in any case, oil spills. You know, one of the questions about the oil spill, they said, well, we can't violate the free will of the oil. The oil's been under pressure for millions of years, so it's really digging, getting out there and pushing itself. So from their point of view, everything is alive and has a will. So, Akala. You know, Kala channels a group soul that identifies itself as the Ra group, and the Ra group says, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to turn it over to you so you can correct me. The Ra group says that they are a conglomerate of souls that went through a physical incarnation, a series of incarnations, maybe a long series of incarnations, and graduated from this realm. And that graduated meaning, in the Buddhist terminology, getting off the wheel of reincarnation. Now, when you get off the wheel of reincarnation, people would say, well, where do you go? And one of the choices, apparently, is to join this huge group soul that acts as a helper and guide for planetary populations that are still stuck in reincarnation. Now that I said that, Carla, correct me.
Well, I could add to it because you took a couple of shortcuts, and I'll
okay.
just quickly fill in the missing material. The Ra group said, and I still talk to the Ra group as part of the Kuo group, but I no longer speak directly with those of Ra because it's too punishing for my body. Since Don died, I don't feel that it's good to go through that. So I do a different kind of discussion now with those of Ra, and that's they're in the background, and the Kuo group is consisting of three social memory complexes, Ra among them, but the one that talks to me is a fifth density social memory complex called Tui. At any rate, what you were missing, Wynn, is just the fill-in material of they didn't simply graduate from third density Earth in their terminology and decide, well, I think I'll be a sixth density social memory complex that is of a clan that wants to serve as a kind of spiritual missionary to other planets. They went through what we all are looking forward to going through that are here on Earth today. We're looking forward to graduating from third density, which is the density of choice, to fourth density, the density of love and understanding. And once we've learned all that there is to know about love, and once we grasp things from a compassionate point of view, then we'll face another graduation day, and that will be the fifth density, which is the density of wisdom. And in that density, we will go through more incarnations. But mind you, these incarnations are an entirely different type of experience from the experiences we have now, because here we're in a heavy illusion. We're under a veil where we don't remember what we were doing before this incarnation, and we don't know that we're part of the dance of all things being one. Fourth density, fifth density, and indeed first and second density, all of those densities are outside of the veil, and there is an understanding, even with rocks and water and air, that all is one beautiful interactive dance, and nature is always willing to take us in. We just don't have the preparation and the compassion to realize that we can dance with nature and we can be part of nature. At any rate, the decision of those of Ra came probably towards the end of their sixth density experience, when they had amalgamated the lessons of unity, the sixth density being the density of unity, and they had gotten that which they needed in that density, and they wanted to serve. And they heard the cry of Earth, is the way that they described it, and so they joined the Brothers and Sisters of Sorrow. And they call themselves that because they hear the cry of Earth. They hear the sorrow of Earth. They hear the yearning of the souls of the people of Earth. And we all do have that yearning, I think, beneath the day-to-day rush, the day-to-day work and eat and sleep and work and eat and sleep. We have this desire to be part of something larger than ourselves. And, of course, we are. We simply have to relax and let that become our reality. But over a long period of time, we've seemed to bemuse ourselves here on Earth with a series of empires. And as we have reincarnated, we've experienced the Babylonian Empire, the Empire of Atlantis, the Empire of Rome, the Reichs, you know, the Holy Roman Empire, and the German Reich, and now the, to a certain extent, no offense to our beautiful country, the American Reich, in its corporate and its aggrandizing, grabbing of the world's resources. And all of these things have become habitual and normal, and it is unfortunate, because in all of these experiences that we've had, our patriotism has been turned into a lust for killing and a lust for the empires that we're building. And of course, all the empires teeter and fall one upon another. There's not a sustaining energy to empire. It comes and it goes. But then that same group of entities that has led service to self-oriented activities like war and rape and pillage in Rome and Atlantis and the Holy Roman Empire and right on down to the present day, they just want to do it again, and maybe this time get it right, make it last longer. But like anything that is of a service to self nature, it can't maintain itself. It eventually topples because it is based on an untruth, which is that the heart doesn't matter. Love doesn't matter. It's a matter of protecting what is ours and doing what is needed and shrugging off and laying aside our ideals. So over many, many empires, over these times that we have experienced together, the that our real human nature has been sublimated to the needs of this striving for empire, but it has not been killed because you can't kill the truth. So here we are, you know, sending our children off to war, going off to war ourselves, and I've been through this myself. I've experienced the feeling, oh my God, all of my friends, my classmates are off in Vietnam. That's how old I am. I must join. And I talked to some people about joining so that I could help too, because it wasn't fair for these people to be facing death and for me not at least serving in a helping way, you know, as a support. So I know all of those feelings, and I also know that in the process of all of these people dying and the generals, you know, rubbing their hands and going, well, this is an acceptable loss, we have pressed into the earth a lot of heat. This is what the raw material said, and what Kuo has said since then, is that there has been, through the centuries, through the millennia, a tremendous amount of service to self type energy pressed, pounded, sunken into the earth. And the earth, as it reaches the end of the age of Pisces, the third density, the fifth sun, whatever, you know, how you want to call it, has reached this particular point in time and space on planet Earth, the Earth needs to balance that imbalance and rid itself of this heat that's been pressed into it. And so you see the tsunamis, you see the hurricanes and the floods and the droughts and all of the extreme weather. Now, that doesn't talk about the oil spill. And the oil spill is such a beautiful figure, you know, a poetic figure that describes our greed for having enough. We must have enough. And it hasn't occurred to enough people yet. It's occurring to more and more people, but not enough yet to have us stop looking for oil and start focusing on sustainable energy, which is also a buzzword. But think about it. You know, there's just so much oil. There are more and more people. So if we can find ways to create our goodies, you know, our air conditioning and our heat and our electric lighting and all of the things that we pretty much take for granted, it's doable. All of our solutions are here. We have the technology for wind power, for water power, for even power from fusion, if we would focus heavily on that. Fusion takes away those great fears of what do you do with the fissionable materials that have been exhausted, because fusion is an entirely different type of atomic power. So we have so many options, and the solar power, especially both passive and active, these energies are waiting to be exploited. And yet, we can't let go of the gasoline-powered economy, at least not until all the oil is used up. So,
one of the problems is...
I think it has more to do with human greed than these natural approaches. So, Wynn.
It's harder to make money from solar power or anything, any kind of free energy. So
you put your finger on it, yes.
So the inquisitive nature...
You don't want to let go. Yeah.
You know, I remember hearing a story years ago of them buying up patents of people that had things for, like, loads of money. And that was the easy way out. The hard way out is it would disappear. because they were so committed to not letting these technologies be out to the common people. You know, there's something you did not mention that I learned from the raw material, which I know is true, but the first time I heard it, it was... really struck me as one of those things that I said, can this be true? Can this be true? And that had to do with the fact negative things, the negative things that look like greed, power brokers, whatever, that behind them there were negative aliens that were channeling through them and that were calling a lot of the shots. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, a fascinating story, and it just sounds like fiction. It's so outré, but the now this wasn't in the raw material. This is in Kuo. Kuo, when asked about things recently, has talked about the fact that the Confederation put us on a time lateral. They quarantined this planet because there had been so much damage done by the entities that did genetic manipulation back 75,000 years ago. And a lot of the negativity has come from that. And so they said, okay, that's enough. You know, we're going to isolate this place and we're going to limit what can get through. So they put us on a time lateral until the end of this particular age. It's soon to be over unless the negative guys win. And the Kuo group calls them the space pirates because of the fact that they are attempting to pirate the time lateral so that we never rejoin the main track of space and time in our galaxy. And if enough of us chose of our own free will to go with, okay, we need to have war, we need to live by fear, we need to have a rule that puts down anything that seems to be a threat to us. We do not need to open our hearts. We do not need to open our hearts to each other and to turn our swords into plowshares, so to speak, biblically. Then we would not be able to rejoin time and space. We would just be, and this is the hoped for plan by the so-called space pirates, the negatively oriented entities that are, as you said, calling the shots and have been for a long, long time. We would be those who lived and died and lived again, always to suffer, always to give that suffering and that pain to the space pirates. That's what they feed on. That's their food. So the stakes are quite large. I'm happy to say that the readings have indicated that the space pirates have lost, that they have not been able to sustain that belief among enough people to take us away from the track of space and time that runs the rest of the galaxy. And consequently, we will shortly be rejoining the main track. I'm very happy that that's the way it came out. But the glory of that is you just can't keep people from knowing their own truth. You know, they wake up, they say, wait a minute, this isn't making sense. And they begin saying to themselves, the rest of the world can wag as it wishes, but as for me and as for my house, we will serve the light. We will find ways to share love with each other. We will try to make this place better before we leave it. And so we have killed the dragon. The tail of the dragon is still thrashing around. And so we have wars and rumors of wars and oil spills and greed and all of the things that make the news. But we have won.
Do you know, in one of the recent channelings, I can't remember whether it was Terry or Daphne, they said something that really struck me. And they said, one of the most powerful things that happened on this planet was Facebook, because it gave the Indigo and Crystal kids a way to express their energy to each other, even though they don't know what they're doing, and that the energy that goes back and forth on Facebook is rocking the boat. And I thought about that. I could feel how that could work. You know, normally you would think light workers or people who are, you know, spiritually oriented, but It's, you don't even have to use the word spiritually oriented. It's the loving way that we give and take energy from each other. And Facebook has created this opportunity for billions of people to do that. And I was fascinated with that concept.
I think the Internet in general is like training wheels for the social memory complex of fourth entity.
Mm.
You know, we're now used to interacting with each other all over the world. We don't think so much in insular ways. We think globally because we may be talking to people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
certainly all the information from all over the world is fed to us. It's a wonderful thing.
The Internet, a microcosm of oneness.
Yes.
It's kind of like you start with one little computer, then it's networked here and networked there, and then everything is there. It's all in on your desk. What would have taken a few square miles, maybe more than that, to begin to compile, is now coming out of this little thing on your desk or in your notepad. Notebook.
That's so true.
So,
yes.
You know, the Internet has, I think, evened the playing field, whereas the negative has the conventional controls of power. The Internet has created intertwining of energies where someone can be recognized, someone can become famous, and they don't need to be rich to do advertising, to get something to happen. And we're
just ask Anne Franco. She was one of the first to use the Internet like that.
Who was?
Annie DeFranco. Mm-hmm.
Annie DeFranco,
and she never,
yeah,
ever advertised, and yet she is world famous, and she made it work for her. And so many
mm-hmm.
people are doing the same thing now. May I say, by the way, that I want to compliment you on the videos that you're putting out of Daphne. I think that you did a good job there, and there you go. You see, people are used to seeing something they can hear and see, and I imagine that it's going to help a lot to have people come up.
Oh, I sent you those videos, right?
Yeah, and I thought that they were really well done, Wynn. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Hey, I have to tell you, Carla, here's the secret. I haven't actually put those videos into my Message a Day network. In fact, it's pending. But I found a program that basically you just feed a bunch of pictures into it, and it acts like a producer. It puts them all together, and 45 minutes later, you pick the music. 45 minutes later, boom. It comes out with those videos that look like they cost thousands of dollars to produce.
Isn't that great?
Carla, I told you, send me a bunch of pictures. Put together something, and I'll make it for you, okay?
That's a generous offer. Thanks a lot.
Hey, you're the one that's got to do the work. All you got to do is write the words, give me the pictures, tell me the order, and we'll pick a piece of music, and I'll have a video like that in about 20 minutes of my time. But that's not a generous
offer. I've got a gal. Have you ever heard of a lady named Renee Martin? She's planning to do exactly that same thing, only hopefully she'll come here first and get some of her own pictures and make it a little bit more, you know, up to the minute. If I found you pictures of myself, they would almost always be of a me that's about half the size that I am now, because I was so tiny for so long. And now I'm not at all tiny. I'm round as a raisin. But I'll keep you as my second
shot. All callers are muted.
If Renee doesn't show up, I'll definitely see you. Thanks
no.
a lot, Renee.
Or you can turn Renee onto this program. It's on the Internet. It's called Animoto, A-N-I-M-O-T-O. And,
okay.
You actually spend $100 and you can use it for 4 months, okay? Mm-hmm. And make as many things as you want.
Oh, by the way, Wynn, I thought about what you were asking, and the first answer that I gave is actually the deeper answer. But there is a point, I think, in our lives at which we decide to take things into our own hands and to leave the ways of our fathers or our mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely did that in college. And what prompted it was that a man asked me to marry him, and the way he said it was, I want to take care of you. I want to protect you. I don't want you ever to find out what the world is really like, which actually angered me because I thought I knew what the world was really like. So I gave up my Ford Foundation scholarship. I quit college, and I went to work in a bar. And it wasn't just any bar. It was a dive. And my father is a jazz drummer, and so, bless his heart, he's long gone, but I adore him. At any rate, he got me a job at Eddie Donaldson's bar called The Shack. And it was an underworld bar. The prostitutes and their johns went there. The people from the underworld of the racetrack at the Kentucky Derby went there. Drug dealers went there. But it was the best jazz in town. And I knew that if I went and I worked as a waitress in that bar, that it would prove one way or the other if I knew what the world was like. So Eddie said, okay, I'll let you work just as a favor. Because it was hard on him because I wasn't going to be in the life like the rest of the waitresses. I certainly wasn't going to go that far. I wasn't going to take dates. But I just wanted to be in that atmosphere and earn my living that way. So for a summer, I worked as a barmaid at the Shack. And people would come up to me and ask me for a date, and I'd say, thank you so much. It's a great compliment, but I don't actually do that. But, you know, Debbie doesn't have a date yet tonight. Why don't you ask her? And then they go, oh, I'm so sorry. And I go, no, it's a compliment. No problem. Well, within about 2 weeks, all the regulars knew me and were my undying swains, my gallants, my knights. And more than one beer bottle was broken trying to defend me, and I didn't need any defense from somebody that didn't know the score yet. So I got so much respect and so much love and so much feedback from that job.
Carla, do you know I had a similar experience?
Really? And that after that I could go back, you know, and I could do my life, but I knew that what you gave out to the world is what you got back. That was what I thought I knew, and by golly, it was so true. So what happened to you, man?
I wasn't a bartender. I got to tell this in 45 seconds because we're going to be off. By the way, LLResearch.org is Carla's website. She has a huge library of all kinds of channelings and phenomenal information about the way the world works and the history of our planet that rings true. But here I was hitchhiking around the country, and I ended up at a discotheque at Greenwood Lake, New Jersey. And I auditioned for the owner, who is kind of a mafioso guy, and he said, no one's going to listen to you. You're too quiet, but I'll put you on in between the bands. So it put me on in between the bands, and sure enough, I was playing my songs. No one was listening, and something in me said, I'm going to be heard. And I said, I'm going to do a primal scream. And I screamed, and I did 1, 2, 3. Everyone screamed back. He hired me for the summer. My sets, all the other bands would come up and jam. It was like the Grateful Dead. And I became a town legend. And that's when I decided to go to Los Angeles and be successful in music. I said, I bring up my songs, people. Hey, I did that in 30 seconds. Okay.
Congrats.
What? We didn't ask any questions. Next time we do this, I'm going to send an email out and have people submit questions in advance, and then we will make that a priority. And Carla, thank you so much for being here. Terry, thank you for being so shy.
It's very interesting. Enjoyed it.
But you're holding energy.
Yes, indeed.
Terry's like the logos. She's behind the scenes. Let's see what they do next. And
well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Okay.
All callers are unmuted.
Everyone's unmuted. Are you guys there? Anyone listening on the conference line?
Yes.
Well, did I hear Maya? Hi, Maya. Maya gets mad at me when I say her name. Forget that I said it. All right, we'll see you all next. We'll see some of you Wednesday, some of you Sunday, and some of you next week. Bye, Carla.
God bless, Lynn. God bless everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Carla.